Y'all know what time it is. It's time for the Shaw's Law Podcast. You know who I am and what I do. Rob Shaw, a.k.a. the Pod God, a.k.a. Harry Potter. And today, it's a lot of stuff happening. I have Ian and Sean Stansfield from the Stans Podcast, brothers and hosts on. So it's a three-man weave, and then I'm going on their podcast, so it's a home and home. There's just stuff happening. Like, these are two of my top five favorite Canadians. It's them, Drake, Jamal Murray, and probably Shea Gilgeous-Alexander. Like, Zach Wilson from the Playgrounder. So SGA's out.
Can't forget Zach.
Yeah, can't leave him off. Introduced us.
Absolutely. Thanks for having us on, Rob.
I'm super excited. Like, for those that don't know, this is the premier Canadian sports podcast. Like, these guys talk football, they talk hockey, they talk hoops, but today they're here to talk Raptors. Let's start with Kyle Lowry is gone. Before the statue goes up, do you guys want to tell your favorite Kyle Lowry story?
Ooh. Well, the easy one is the finals, right? Game 6 in Golden State. He gets what felt like 47 points in the first quarter.
It's and easy really because it's the answer.
Well, yes, but that's the answer. But again, we're brothers. So my favorite thing about Kyle Lowry is just how polarizing he was for Raptors fans, most notably my brother, who's on here, is an absolute super fan. So just the love-hate, one game wanting him, this guy shipped off to Siberia, the next game indicting him into the Hall of Fame is just, it's incredible. And now he's reached the pinnacle and he's the greatest Raptor of all time.
To be fair, I mean, I think in the beginning, the Lowry experience was a bit uneven, let's say. And maybe that's because of circumstance. You know, he got here and, you know, was playing behind Jose Calderon, another Raptor legend. So, you know, it started rocky. The answer is game 6 of the finals. Kawhi's hobbling. Not sure where the offense is coming. And he comes out and puts the team right on track. Boom. That's the answer. Another good one, though, that we cannot forget was his last All-Star game. He's taking charges. That was the All-Star game that we first introduced the rule where it's not dependent on time.
The Eli ending, where they play to a target score after X amount of points or minutes in the fourth quarter.
And Kyle Lowry took a charge. And he wasn't even on the ground yet and was pointing the direction of the other side of the court because he knew Kyle Lowry leads the league every year in charges. He knew. He pointed the other end of the court. He isn't even on his backside yet. He knew it was a charge going the other way. I will love him forever for stuff like that.
The only thing that could have made his tenure better is game 5. Open in the corner. Time winds down, and he's got a 3 off to win the title. And Draymond Green, we're in the building, in that corner. Draymond Green comes out of absolutely nowhere to get, like, a fingertip on it and send it wide.
If he puts that in, I'm storming the court, getting arrested. And I'm sorry, like, I'm probably not on this podcast. So it worked out for the best. It worked out for the best. Those are some good Lowry ones. And look, like, I know we probably got to move on to the next thing, but the one last thing I'll say about Kyle Lowry and the beauty of him is how amazing he was in the community here. And that's all kidding aside, right? I mean, no one embraced this community quite like Kyle Lowry. Every year, you know, Thanksgiving food drives, always around the holidays. This is a guy who embodied this city and became a Torontonian. And like, for us being the only team in Canada, like, that stuff matters. So there's a massive hole in the hearts of Raptor fans and Canadians everywhere, for sure.
Man, we started this with a Kyle Lowry love fest. But well-deserved. Where is he? So he's the greatest Raptor of all time. And that just shows, like, how much being a part of the community and the team for big moments matter. Because from a talent perspective, is he a top 5 Raptor ever?
Well, we haven't had a lot of good players. I think that's something
Carter,
that Kawhi. Yeah, Carter. Kawhi, I think, is number one. You'd probably
Tracy,
say
this Bosh.
But when they were here, like you'd say Kawhi one, probably Carter two from a talent perspective, even though his exit was a little bit debated in this country,
unceremonious.
Unceremonious, that's right.
He was a
but
dick.
Yeah, I still think he's got to be there in top five. Like, just, you know, because again, who else have we had? Like, what are we gonna
do? Better than DeMar.
Yes, he was better than DeMar even when DeMar was here.
Okay, so that's probably five. That probably puts him behind Bosh, Carter, T-Mac, and Kawhi.
But even still, T-Mac wasn't good here. Like, he was fine, but he wasn't
T-Mac
until he left.
Elite here,
he's a teenager.
Or there.
And look, we got to remember, I mean, we're sort of towing on the dangerous line of trying to figure out who's a basketball player and who's a hooper. You know that debate that happens on Twitter all the time? You know, where people are like, oh, that's a hooper. You know, like, I don't think we need to get into the differences of that. This is a guy who, as he showed in the Boston series in the bubble, can score in the post. As we saw in the Golden State series, can shoot from just about anywhere, from any angle, to knock down shots, can defend your best player, everything else. I mean, so when you talk about skill set, there, you know, other than Kawhi, there's never been, as a basketball player, there's never been a more complete basketball player to play here, period, end of story. And because at the end of the day, like, we can get tantalized by, you know, Vince's highlights and, you know, T-Mac's sort of youth.
Limitless upside at that point.
Yes, yes. You know what I mean? You look at that guy and you're like, wow, he can go anywhere. DeMar, obviously, with the footwork and everything else. But this is a guy who did everything. And when you're very good at everything, that makes you a great.
All right. You guys have. Well, before I get into my next point, what do you see happening this season? Is this a rebuild year, or are we fighting for the playoffs? What do you think is the end goal in Toronto this year?
I think Ian and I have differing views on what the team is going to be, but I think we would both agree on where they're going to end up. And they're fighting for the playoffs. This would be considered more of a retool, in my opinion, not a rebuild. They lucked out. They got the fourth overall pick. They moved up, jumped a few teams this offseason, you know, but they still have the thing with the Raptors is their core is still good enough that I think their floor is pretty high compared to a lot of the other teams that are in that 5 through 12 range in the Eastern Conference. I think their floor is really high. When you have Pascal Siakam and Fred VanVleet and OG Anunoby, barring a lot of health issues, you're going to win your share of games. They're going to be a pain in the ass to play against. I do think that they're going to, that playoffs is definitely where their mindset is at right now, while building the youth that they have.
See, I think the important, so if we're answering the question of what is the plan is to stay the course, remain competitive. And if the opportunity arises to pounce on a star, a superstar, not a Ben Simmons star, a superstar. If that opportunity comes, then I'm going to be able to jump at something like that. If you look around the league, I mean, take OKC and, you know, and their, you know, dump truck full of picks aside. If we're talking about strictly assets, there's not many teams that have more of them than the Raptors, right? You have, you know, all-stars or borderline all-stars with tradable solid contracts in VanVleet and Siakam. You have young up-and-comers on those middle tier $15, $16 million contracts like Anunoby and Trent. You have expiring veterans like Dragic, all of your picks. And then you have these sort of young dudes that we just don't, add Boucher into that middle tier group. You know, then we have these young dudes that we just don't know yet between Barnes, Achiuwa, Flynn, that group. So if you're talking about what's the plan, that's the plan. If we're talking about where we think they're going to end up, I think we have to discuss health, right? I mean, Chris Boucher is out a month. Siakam, it sounds like, is probably targeting an American Thanksgiving return. Birch hasn't played yet because he's under this health and safety protocols, which leads me to believe he was the last Raptor vaccinated, by the way. So I do think that part is going to matter. Healthy, though, this is a playoff team. Healthy, this team is better than the Knicks. It's better than Washington. It's probably right there-ish with Indiana, depending on how their situation plays out. That's the group. But I can unequivocally say on this podcast, they are going to finish with a better record than the New York Knicks.
And we haven't even touched on how last season they were displaced all year. Like, they didn't play at home. They lived in Florida. But
yeah, so, and after it just started jumping there, Rob. I mean,
oh, go ahead.
After, you know, playing in Florida and having that whole, you know, tough start, then they started to find their groove a little bit, started to win some games, right? And they're all of a sudden, oh man, they're in seventh place. Now they're in sixth place. You know, they're making their move. Then COVID hits. Everybody, and when I say everybody, I mean legit everybody on the roster got it. It feels like I would, you know, it was the whole team, all the key players got it, and they could never recover from that, right? You can never recover from that. So this was a team, obviously a team that had Kyle Lowry, but this was a team that was finding its way. And I expect now being at home and when that health comes, they're going to be able to find their way again.
I love the young guys you guys have put together, like Scotty Barnes, OG, even Precious. I think Precious has landed in two great situations for what he was as a prospect, like two situations where player development and being a professional are above all things, like Miami and then the way they develop players in Toronto. Like, that's great for some, because Precious was a project. And then you guys made the move for Gary Trent last season at the deadline. So my first question, what was the Gary Trent experience like?
It was incredible, honestly. Like, he came in here, and again, we're going to kind of come back to Ian's original point about Toronto and embracing the culture, but he immediately embraced Toronto. He immediately embraced the culture, which automatically won him over with fans, right? You know, whether it's Instagram posts or, you know, getting out into the community and doing things like again, the community being Tampa at the time, but he very much embraced the We the North mantra. He very much embraced the Toronto fans and the Toronto mentality. Again, he's going to be a bit of an adventure, right? You know, he's young, he's a streaky shooter. He's longer than I even remember him being. And I think that's one thing that I would say about Gary Trent is, I think it's who he was traded for that was the difficult piece, right? Norman Powell is obviously beloved by this team, but they need his shooting. That's what they need. And again, Ian obviously can dive deeper into the Gary Trent experience, but just as someone who, when he came over, immediately Raptors Twitter, Raptors engagement automatically drew to this guy from a basketball fit. The one thing again is defense. He's going to have to work on that end of the floor. Cause if you can't hang on that end of the floor with this team, you're going to find yourself losing minutes. That's our identity, is being difficult to play against and knocking down opportunistic shots.
When Gary came over, there's one thing that was clear, and that's that Gary could score, you know, threw up 44, against the Cavs, going 17 for 19. I mean, obviously that's not going to be the standard, but he's showing you that I can bomb it with the best of them. Sean made a good point. I mean, it's got to come down to defense. If you're going to play with this coach in this city, with this organization, you have to guard. No choice. But while I think that is a big, big thing to watch, the thing I want to see with Trent is a little bit more facilitation, playmaking, initiating the offense, right? I mean, this doesn't necessarily need to turn into, you know, a Trae Young or a Luka Doncic, you know, or Steph Curry cross-court passes with one hand. Like, we don't need that. But it'd be nice to see some pick-and-roll creation, even some secondary creation off the ball. I think those things would be good for him. Because, look, you know, I love Fred VanVleet, Dragic, Flynn. Those are your ball handlers, right? Mm-hmm. And who knows how long Dragic is going to be here. So if I could see one thing from Trent, obviously I'd like his defense to go up a little bit, but I do think we have the tendency to overrate Norman Powell's defense just a bit.
Just a bit. Yep.
Just a bit. And I want to see Trent start to initiate. That's where his game needs to go.
Now, I know I'm not hosting this podcast, but I would like to ask a question. I think the biggest thing for Trent is, what is his role going to be? Is he going to be your starting two guard, or is he going to be your sixth man off the bench? I think he's better suited as a sixth man off the bench coming in and scoring. But I'm sure we're going to get to some lineup questions later, Rob. But again, I think that's the most intriguing thing coming into this year is, what is Gary Trent going to be? Is he going to be a starting two guard, or is he going to be your super soaker off the bench?
Well, you led me to my next question. Who are the starters?
So my only concern with the Trent versus Dragic question for six man is that the most natural fit is Trent coming off the bench. It's always helpful to have a bomber come off the bench and carry that second unit a bit, right? Particularly a team that is going to be strapped for scoring. But Dragic was really good last year when Miami sent him to the bench, right? He was able to create with that second unit, and it really, really improved not only his own personal play, but the play of the rest of the Miami Heat. So there's a natural fit there. This is a guy who's willing to do it. You know, I think that what that question is going to come down to is how much, I hate to answer a question with another question, but how confident are we in Fred VanVleet's ability to be the main initiator of an NBA offense, right? I believe he's going, personally, I think Freddie is going to knock on the door of being an all-star this year. So I think it's going to work. But if the coaching staff agrees, then I think, you know, then I think you can probably play him with Trent and feel pretty comfortable.
And so if we're getting back to who are the starters on this team. So I think obviously two different questions because Siakam's going to be out to start the year, but let's say that he's healthy, right? You know, a little magic dust. He's back. He's in the opening line, starting lineup. On opening night, I do think that Nick Nurse is going to value the veteran presence of Dragic in that starting lineup early, right? So I think you're going to see Freddie, Goran, OG, Siakam, and then Kem Birch. I think that's going to be your starting five, although Precious in the preseason is making a case. But to Ian's point earlier, Kem can't play right now. He's in health and safety protocol. So I think that's going to be your starters with Gary Trent, Precious, Scotty Barnes, insert 6'9" player here to come off the bench. I think that's going to be what you see, especially early. And it's going to be interesting to see with that starting lineup spacing. You know, it's going to be a dog of a team to play against, right?
Precious is winning that starter center job.
You're leaning the precious.
He's winning okay. that. I mean, we're going to be. I mean, by the time Birch is out, whenever that is, we're going to be talking about a 2-week advantage in reps, in playing the preseason games. Like, that stuff's going to matter. Like, it's not like Kem Birch is Joel Embiid. He doesn't automatically walk in as the starter. So I think Precious, first of all, has earned it with his play, was earning it again tonight. I think that we're going to see this is going to be a Precious start. He is definitely going to win that job.
What's even more interesting is who closes games. Because I think one thing that the Raptors unlocked last year was OG at the five. And if you're going to play your five best players down the stretch, now, again, yeah, going up against Joel Embiid or Anthony Davis or Nikola Jokic, yeah, you know, OG at the five is not ideal. But I think if you're playing your five best players, you're probably going with Gary Trent Jr., with Goran Dragic, with Fred VanVleet, and then Siakam and OG. I think that's going to be the really interesting pieces, who closes games for this team.
So I wasn't expecting to hear that Precious was going to be the starter. I haven't seen any Raptors preseason. Has he been that impressive? And what are the words coming out of camp?
Game one of the preseason, which was what, Tuesday? He walked down on Drummond, hit him with a hezzy, and then step back three in his eyeball. And it looked comfortable. And even Drummond looked at him like, okay. And, you know, and this is a dude who is going to run, is going to play hard, going to jump, play defense, and basically what you need him to do, which is run rim to rim. I think the thing you want to see from Precious is, again, that secondary playmaking where if you catch the ball in the middle of the floor, are you on an island or are you able to sort of make that play? I think the reports on Precious have been good. I mean, as a throw in basically in a Kyle Lowry sign and trade, he's getting, I think we got to feel fairly confident with him ending up being the starter. And quite frankly, I think you're going to see a universe where Scottie Barnes is starting as well.
Yep.
Especially with Siakam out.
Especially early. Now you're conveniently leaving out that he also airballed a pull up jumper from the elbow right off the bat, but he did have the confidence to step into that moment against Drummond. He hit that step back three. He then hit another long two. He was running around like crazy. And you say throw in, I think he was the piece that they wanted. I think Dragic was the throw in for the money.
Precious. I thought that it was a,
yeah,
give me a young prospect in the deal.
And he's literally exactly what Nick Nurse and Masai Ujiri want right now, which is
the only thing I'd say about the trade itself, though, is that, you know, if you're the Raptors and you don't want Tyler Hero and you don't want Duncan Robinson for $19 million for some reason, why is that man making $19 million? I'll never understand. You know, who else are you asking for? Right. I mean, you know, as much as we like Precious and Precious is a Masai guy, and I believe all true, I do think there's a certain part that's like, okay, we don't want Hero. We don't want none. We don't want any of your bottom bench guys. So it's Precious. Right.
Yeah.
That's so I think both can be true.
You guys drafted fourth this year and got Scottie Barnes. Who did you want?
Suggs. We were both extremely disappointed. And Ian, I'm not going to let you forget it. We were both extremely disappointed. We were on FaceTime with each other. We collapsed into a heap. We collapsed. And and everyone knows that do we have to owe him an apology now? Is like, can we just be open that we wanted Suggs? We got Scottie Barnes. He's taken the world by storm, at least the Canadian basketball scene by storm. But come on, Raptors fans have to stop lying to themselves. Everyone wanted Suggs.
Ian? Right at that second, I absolutely wanted Jalen Suggs, right? I mean, the moment I saw him make that three-quarter length pass, you know, that was in the Final Four. I can't remember who they played.
The UCLA game.
He made a three-quarter court pass, one hand in rhythm, absurd. I mean, at that moment, I'm like, okay, you know, this is a guy I love. Then he makes the block, you know, then he makes the shot. And we're like, okay, this guy is a perfect Raptor, a guy who wants to play hard guard and make plays. I mean, that's screams Raptor. Then as it sort of went along and the days went by, you sort of started to understand why Barnes made sense, right? Suggs didn't have a good workout. He didn't tank his workout. I don't believe that that's true. He, you know, so Jalen didn't have a good workout. Pair that in with Scottie's size and his likability and what he means to the culture. Like, all that stuff matters to Masai. So yes, did I want Suggs? Absolutely. Am I thrilled that we got Scottie instead? Yeah, I'm thrilled with Scottie. But I think what people need to understand is that, like, Jalen Suggs probably, at least at the start, is going to be a better basketball player. I just think that that's true. And anyone that's about to be disappointed by that is just going to be disappointed in general, because that's going to happen. But I think what Scottie brings you is Scottie brings you something beyond basketball, right? Between culture and winning and, you know, this is a team that struggled with vibes down in Tampa. Scottie brings you positive vibes. And I think at the very least that matters.
Rob, when I tell you this man, our text messages back and forth from the moment that the draft pick was
put in. To be fair, I called it going to be Barnes.
I know. To 72 hours later, it was like DEFCON 9. I hate this. Everything sucks. I'm done. 3 days later, this guy owns a Scottie Barnes jersey, basically. Like, this was the turnaround that we're talking about. And yes, he is a vibe. Can I kill the mood just a little bit? I meant no one can be this happy. Like, his enthusiasm is infectious. It's incredible. It's amazing. But it's am I too cynical? Like, being a dad, like, worn down all the time? Like, am I killing vibes? Is that what I'm doing here? Because, like, we're not even into the regular season. I'm like, all right, just relax a little bit.
How would you feel if you were 20 and were in the NBA?
I'd be pretty jacked up.
Yeah, you would be, considering you the sixth man on Florida State last year. Yeah, I'd be pretty stoked.
All right.
Give me that.
I don't know if we did this on a pod or if it's we normally have a text message chain and we have like a Twitter group. So I don't know, but I remember we've had this Jalen Suggs conversation. I want to say we had it on lottery night, and I don't know. I don't think it was on a pod. I think we were just in like a text chain.
Yeah.
Just talking. And I knew you guys were all the way in on Suggs.
We had just won Suggs. It was done. Like, we were drafting him.
Hey, what's not to love? He's going to be awesome. Jalen Suggs is going to be awesome. It's going to happen.
He went to Orlando. Not many prospects thrive with the Orlando Magic organization.
It takes is one Penny Hardaway to match.
That's true. Right? That's true. I love how you went for Penny and not Shaq. That's incredible.
Because Shaq was the number one pick. Penny wasn't. Penny was around five, I think.
I feel like Penny was two in his. Penny was traded for Weber.
He was number three.
He was three? Okay.
He was three.
Who pops on this team? Is there a young guy that Toronto's on TNT and you're not a league pass person, so you haven't been watching them, and then you're like, whoa, this dude's having a great season.
It's OG Anunoby.
The Tyrese Maxey Award? Is that what you would call it? The Tyrese Maxey Award?
No. The Tyrese Maxey Award is this only dude's not going to do television. Shit unless it's on national television. This is I haven't been watching this team. This guy's way better than I expected all year. Tyrese is only going to go crazy in natty games.
I think, as I said earlier, I believe Fred VanVleet is going to knock on the All-Star team. He may even mess around and make it. But you could sort of see that coming last year, right? The scoring was up. The assists were up. The defense was ratcheted at another level where it was even better than his all defensive self, which he should be all defensive first team. You guys are out of your mind. But I think the guy is OG, right? I mean, the reason the Raptors have been traded for Ben Simmons yet is because they're not trading OG. And that means something. You know, 23, better handle, all-world defensive player. He's already improved as a shooter. This guy is turning into a weapon. And if he can get into that 17, 18 points per game with that all-world defense, he's going to pop. He is absolutely the guy.
So I think what you're talking about, young guy who would pop is like, oh, I haven't watched him or even read about him. I think, again, the easy answer is probably Scottie Barnes, but he's a fourth overall pick. Like, his enthusiasm, his playmaking ability, his defense is going to stand out on nationally televised games. For me, it's between Malachi Flynn and Yuta Watanabe. I think those are the two where it's like, oh shit, they got 12 minutes and they mattered. And, you know, Malachi, we've talked about, we argued about this after the draft last year, Rob, where I think
Pritchard.
Thank you. Yes. But Yuta does a lot of stuff really, really well. Again, 6'9", good playmaker, can hit shots, plays hard. I think that he might be the guy that pops.
And he wrote an amazing article in the Players Tribune last year. Like, heartwarming stuff.
If Boucher can get healthy, he's another guy, right? He's not that young. Like, he's a lot older than you think.
League young, though. NBA time is young.
He was definitely our guy last year. Last year, he was our guy on League Pass where you're like, holy shit, this guy is 112 pounds and 6'10", just jacking threes from the logo. Like, that's what Chris Boucher was last year, and it was incredible.
All right, I have a question, and I think I'm cool to ask this because I'm black, so I'm pretty sure that, like, this is cool. Is OG Anunoby Nigerian?
Great question.
Yes,
I have. Yes. There you go.
Well, because yes. I know that that's Masai's descent, and I feel like that's why Precious Achiuwa was somebody that he targeted. It's no secret around the league that basketball without borders, particularly in Africa, was Masai's pet project. So I just wanted to know, and I think that does matter to Masai.
He was born in England, though. He was born
in the UK, but his parents are Nigerian. And the reason it immediately clicked for me is because he was supposed to be on the Nigerian national team.
That's right. Yes. Yes. And
by the way, a Nigerian national team that was a nightmare to play against. If you add OG to that group, by the way, Precious Achiuwa, also Nigerian.
I know Precious is Nigerian. And the Nigerian national team fielded like 8 NBA guys this year.
Yep.
And
it's growing.
That number is only going to grow.
Yep. Because of the hard work of people like Masai Ujiri, by the way.
And when you asked that question really quick, Rob, when you asked that question, all that brought me back to was the Giannis draft. And again, and where if you can go back and watch the YouTube video, it's incredible where he's like freaking out trying to get Giannis. It's like all he wants. And Bobby Webster's in the room and they're just like, he wanted Giannis. That's all he wanted. It's the Basketball Without Borders thing was an influence in that too. It was incredible.
What is a great, what makes you walk away from this Raptors season saying, hey, I'm happy with how the season ended? What's a good season? Realistic expectations.
I'll let Ian go first.
I don't think there's like a wrong answer, right? Like, the wrong answer is your players get worse. Fred gets worse. you know, Siakam doesn't get back to form, that's obviously worst case. But if this team's end up, if this team, you know, maybe gets injured or something happens, they end up with a bottom five finish. Like, I don't think anyone in that organization is going to be discouraged with the path, right? Because you add a top five play, a top five pick to this team, you're in great shape. I think just missing out on the play-in would kind of be a bummer, only because it, you know, you're sort of in that middle tier that you don't want to be in. But again, I mean, I don't think you're necessarily falling short of expectations. And then anything above that, you know, playing in the play-in, making the playoffs, making, you know, a round, I think all of that is gravy anyway. I just don't think, I think there's, from the outside world, there's no expectations to begin with. So there's no downside. Where I think they finish is play in to back end of the playoffs.
Yeah, I think this comes back to earlier on in the podcast, Rob, where it's, okay, what's the best case scenario for this team? Development of their players. So the retooling aspect is, as we talked about earlier on, right? The development of the players, making sure the young guys stay healthy. Malachi Flynn, Scotty Barnes, those Precious Achiuwa, they are getting better. They get reps. They're playing competitive basketball games. They're in a good culture. And then, and they take a step. If OG Anunoby can come out and make that next leap, damn, like, man, we're in for a treat on our team. If we're just talking standings, again, I think this team is, I don't think they're in the top four. Like, don't get me wrong, I'm not going to go that far. But I disagree with Ian. I think that a bummer, I think that if they miss the play-in, it would be a disaster. Because I think that they're talented enough to be, you know, high-end probably fifth in the Eastern Conference, low-end, you know, probably in that eight range. I think that they are clearly a playoff team.
For me, I think they're on the cusp of the play-in. Like, I think they'll be fighting for the play-in. Health is always going to matter for everybody. And I think there's new roles. Like, Lowry was a safety blanket for everybody. Like, he was steady. He was consistent. Now it's, hey, Fred, you're the leader now. And Pascal, you're the leader. OG, are you going to take that step? Because I had OG as my most improved player last year. And I might just double back to that and be like, I was a year early.
I can't believe, why am I the optimistic one? You guys are both going pessimistic here. Like,
the East is improved. Like, nothing against the Raptors. Like, just it's
for you. Don't tell me you're all in Chicago. Please don't tell me you're all in Chicago.
You could be, in order to be disappointed, you have to have expectation, right? Like, what is
that's true? That's a good point.
Everyone's expectation is the team's going to suck. You look at the rankings or ESPN or everything else, they're not looking at this like this is even a playoff team or even a play-in team. So if the expectation, I think their over-under is what, 37 or whatever it is, like this is, the expectations are low. So if they don't make the playoffs, it's not like they fell short of whatever these fake expectations were. I think internally, they believe they're a playoff team. And I don't see why they wouldn't be. We also haven't mentioned Nick Nurse once. Yeah. He's about to show you fools why he's a top five coach.
Yeah, I think I said 5 to 8. I think 5 to 10 is fair. All right, I'll be a little more pessimistic like you guys, okay?
Oh, my God. He's about to show you fools. I think we could just end on that note. Ladies and gentlemen, this was Sean and Ian Stanfield from the Stans podcast. I will be on their show doing Western Conference over-unders. Please make sure you follow them on all social medias, especially Instagram. The clips they put out of the pods on Instagram, like, you see them and automatically you're like, oh, I gotta go see what this episode was about. So that's From the Stands podcast, and that's everywhere you stream. Guys, thanks for pulling up.
Thanks, buddy.
This has been the Shaw's Law podcast, and like that, we out.